Welcome to Heavens Declare. I'm Jim Burr, and we're doing astronomy from a biblical perspective and the Hubble Space Telescope. We have over 300 pictures lined up for this series of programs. Today we're talking about the Big Bang. In fact, the Big Bang that never happened. I did a bunch of programs on Loma Linda television, and the title of the whole series was The Hubble, the Bible, the Big Bang. And I think from that, some people thought I believed in the Big Bang. Let's make it clear, I do not believe in the Big Bang, and neither do a lot of scientists. And of course, you probably heard it said, I believe in the Big Bang, God said it, and bang, there it was. And that kind of actually seems to work. There's a lot of scientists that have problems with the Big Bang. In fact, there are 300 that signed a statement that they have questions, great questions about the Big Bang. And there have been a couple of conferences held. There was one held in 2005 in Portugal. There was another one that was held in Port Arthur, Washington. And it's called A Crisis in Cosmology, a crisis. Because they look at the Big Bang, and there's so many problems with the Big Bang. And the reason they hang on to the Big Bang is they have nothing better to go to. And like I think it was George Smoot said, we typically don't dump ship unless we got something better to jump to, and for now I'm going to stay with the Big Bang. I have a statement here that is regarding the crisis in cosmology, this conference that was held. And this was in 08. About 50 astronomers and physicists met at the Red Lion Hotel in Port Angeles, Washington. Science from the conference told reporters that the Big Bang, Bang's origin of the universe is a myth. It never happened. It was the 50 scientists. The critics claimed that the Big Bang theory suggests the universe began out of nothing, violating the first law of thermodynamics. Proponents of the Big Bang theory say that such criticism is unwarranted for two reasons. The first is that the Big Bang doesn't address the creation of the universe, but rather the evolution of the universe. So we have no explanation for how the Big Bang happened. What caused it? What banged? You know, why did it bang? So the first reason is that the Big Bang doesn't explain how it started, only how it has evolved. The other reason is that since the laws of science, now listen to this, since the laws of science break down as you approach the creation of the universe, there's no reason to believe the first law of thermodynamics would apply. First law of thermodynamics says nothing comes from nothing. You can't create energy nor destroy energy. You can only change it. If I strike a match here, from that match, heat goes out, light goes out, smoke goes out. So we have simply changed from one state to another. And so the first law of thermodynamics is, you see all this energy we're showing you in one of our series is eruptions on the sun, 120,000 sextillion tons of matter blasting off the sun. The sun fuses 620 metric tons of hydrogen every second. Every second it fuses 620 metric tons of hydrogen. Well, that's energy. Where did that come from? You see, according to the first law of thermodynamics, it can't happen. And they say, well, it really doesn't apply because the laws of physics break down as you approach the creation of the universe. So where did the laws come from? You know, where did the laws of physics come from? And so that's the problem. We have a graphic coming up here that shows you what they think the universe, you know, started with the Big Bang and how it has exploded. And then you see man way over there on the right. First you have this little speck that exploded, and it got, this envelope got bigger and bigger, and then stars formed, and after 1 second, and then 3 seconds you had, galaxies forming. And then man. And that's where it all came from. That's the best explanation they have, okay? I was reading an article which said, if the latest discovery is true, we know less than nothing. The accelerating universe violates all standard physics, we're told. Now, and it says, forget the Big Bang. Now it's the Big Bounce. And The next one that we have is Scientific America, and that says there are quantum gaps in the Big Bang theory. Why our best explanations of how the universe evolved must be fixed or replaced. That's Scientific America, quantum gaps in the Big Bang. We had another headline, front page cover here of this is an astronomy magazine, and it says the Big Bang is cosmology's greatest puzzle. And the next one we have is Science News. And Science News says the Big Bang wasn't all it was cracked up to be. And then we have our undiscovered universe, the Big Bang or Big Bust. And we have one sky and telescope. It says the universe is in a box. You know, forget the Big Bang. So the universe from the Big Bang to a big box. All these articles written about the problems, you know, with the Big Bang. And here's a book written that says the Big Bang never happened. And that's kind of an interesting book. They got a lot of good material in there. David Dilworth said the Big Bang theory is a house of tissue paper that is about to collapse under its own weight. This was a statement from the Crisis in Cosmology conference that was held there in Port Angeles, Washington. And so these scientists say the universe is in a crisis. It's a crisis, as they have no explanation for how we got here, and they don't want to accept the Bible, which says, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And, you know, at the Hadron Collider, we've actually proven that statement. Psalm 33, verse 6 says, by the word of the Lord were the heavens made. And we can now see that the Hadron Collider takes $1 million worth of electricity every day, and with that tremendous energy, that tremendous power, they're actually able to make protons. Matter, this is matter. They've actually been able to prove creation and create matter from energy. And that verifies, I mean, Psalm 33, verse 6, by the word of the Lord were the heavens made. Folks, that is the general theory of relativity. That is E equals mc squared, and they have proven it at the Hadron Collider. I'd like to share with you an illustration of what's going on in our solar system. And for the illustration, we've got a little ball. This is going to represent Jupiter, okay, going around. My hand is the sun, okay? So my hand is the sun. Here's Jupiter. This is gravity. This string will be gravity that's going to hold Jupiter in its orbit. So as I swing this, you'll notice that my hand is wobbling, okay? Well, as Jupiter goes around our sun, it actually caused the sun to move a half a million miles, 500,000 miles. The sun is going to move off center. Well, when we get Jupiter and Saturn, it's quite a different scene. Now, we go to, when Jupiter and Saturn gang up on the sun, in other words, when they're both on the opposite side of the sun, it almost moves at 1 million miles off center. When Jupiter and Saturn are balanced on each side of the sun comes back almost to the center. You can look this up. If you look at the very center of the sun, there's actually some video clips you can see out there and see how the sun wobbles. And what is interesting, I was attending a lecture in Oklahoma. A professor from the University of Oklahoma was lecturing on gravity. And I got choked up on gravity. And what this professor said is when you have three bodies of different masses, there's no mathematician on Earth that can write a formula for the center of rotation of three bodies that are different masses. And when I got home, I emailed the professor and I said, before I repeat this in public, did I hear you correctly? And he said, yes. He said, go to Wikipedia, three-body problem. Since Isaac Newton, nobody has ever been able to write a formula for the center of rotation of three bodies that are different masses. He said, now we can work at it. We can get closer. The longer we work, the closer we get, but it never has been done. It never can be done. Now, there's a couple guys on the internet claim they have done it, but I guess, go along with this professor and another professor that I heard about. And so he says, we can simulate it on a computer. what's happening, but we cannot write a formula for the rotation of three. And what choked me up in this meeting is the fact I've been showing audiences for the last few years 10 million stars in orbit. And we have, as I've mentioned before, we have in our galaxy, our galaxy is 100 billion suns, 200 billion suns rotating. But as we look around there, we see these globs of star clusters, globular clusters. The Omega cluster, they say, is 10 million stars. And so the Hubble zoomed in and zoomed in and zoomed in on that. In fact, we have a graphic coming up here where you'll see the still frame. This is the still frame of the Omega star cluster. And just look at the beauty, look at the color. The red stars being the cooler stars, the blue stars and the white stars being the hotter stars. What an image that is. And what is exciting, the Hubble zoomed in, zoomed in, zoomed in, and then it plotted these stars. It watches these stars for 4 years. And in 4 years, it can now project how they will move over the next 10,000 years. And what choked me up was we can't figure out a formula for three. We have 100 billion in the galaxy. God's got it all figured out. We got 100 billion or 200 billion galaxies and 100, 200 billion stars in each galaxy. God's got it all under control in their appointed order. And we can't give you a formula for three. You say, what is man? And so we have a little clip. We want to show you that clip as the Hubble zoomed in on the Omega star cluster. And you'll see how they're going to move over the next 10,000 years. 10 million stars. Quite a sight to see, all part of our Milky Way galaxy. We have over 100 of these globule clusters of stars. I think what would really be exciting would be to live on the edge of that cluster of stars. Can you imagine having, 10 million stars in the sky as bright as Venus for 6 months of the year, and then 6 months of the year you're looking off into space where you have other things to look at. But this is just an incredible clip of the stars. And now you see their motion. Here's how these stars will move over the next 10,000 years. And then we want to show you after this part of this roll is what happens to our sun. Our sun is traveling through space at about 45,000 miles an hour, taking planets with it and a helix. And in fact, all of those stars are moving on that screen that you saw, moving 40, 50,000 miles an hour. This is actually a computer animation of what you might see if you were going to travel through a galaxy. I think we're going to get to travel with Jesus through space. The Bible says in Revelation 14, the redeemed from the earth are going to follow the Lamb wherever he goes. And the Bible says, and so shall we ever be with the Lord. I bet he can't wait to take you and show you the beautiful things that he has created. And so here is what's actually happening to our sun as it goes through space in a helical. It's taking the planets with it in rotation. That outer planet there on the coming through the bottom, that would probably be Pluto. Takes Pluto 247 years to go around the sun. It's traveling at 10,600 miles an hour. In other words, while Pluto goes around one time, our Earth has gone around 247 times. But you see all the planets making their orbit there. Now, what it doesn't show you is the wobble I was telling you about, how our sun actually wobbles by the motion of Jupiter. So as the sun is traveling through space, we should see it moving every 10 years, 500,000 miles. If you were going to look at our sun from space, suppose you're looking at, you're in space and you're looking at our sun, and Jupiter's going around like this, okay? If Jupiter's going around this way, you wouldn't sense that motion. But if you could visualize it with Jupiter going around the sun like this, okay, well, you would see a sine wave. You would see a wave where the motion of the sun goes up, comes back down to a baseline, so it's going to go up for 2.5 years. It's a 10-year. Jupiter's a 10-year orbit, okay? So we got a 10-year sine wave. Okay, so it would start off, it goes up 250,000 miles, then it comes back down through center, and goes 250,000 miles the other way. Every 10 years, you get a sine wave, okay? You with me on that? Then Saturn goes around every 29 years. So now you've got this sine wave increasing over a 29-year period. And so you've got two sine waves superimposed on each other. So you got a 10-year sine wave, and you got a 29-year sine wave. And then you've got Mercury. Little old Mercury goes around every 88 days. Mercury's going to move the sun about 200 miles. So now on this sine wave, you got an oscillation here. And then Venus is going to go around every 250-some days. And so you've got another sine wave of Venus, which is going to be about 500 miles. Venus is going to move it as it's going across. And then Earth is going to move the sun 300 miles. And Mars isn't going to have much effect, but because, you know. So you've got all these motions. I have heard that the sun has about 30 different motions with it. And, you know, because it's the sun itself is spinning every 28 days, okay, rotating on its axis. It's kind of like a water balloon. It kind of does a little of this. It's in the galaxy, rotating in the arm of the galaxy. It goes around the galaxy, and the galaxy is moving, part of the local cluster. And so we have all these incredible motions that our sun is going through. And what's interesting, you remember seeing that beautiful picture of all those stars. In Desire of Ages, it says, God is in active communication with every part of His creation through channels which we cannot discern. Our God is an awesome God, but we're talking about the Big Bang. Now, there was a special article, The Cosmic Life Cycle, and that is in Scientific America. And this whole issue was just about the origin of the universe. And some of the things, the next statements I have all come from that magazine. And it made this statement, with the Big Bang, first there was nothing, and then it exploded. The Big Bang offers no explanation apart from dumb luck. The Big Bang offers no explanation for the origin of the universe apart from dumb luck. We just got really lucky, folks, with the Big Bang. It just got really lucky. And yet evolutionists claim that the Big Bang is good established science. Good established science. We've been talking about this crisis in cosmology. 300 scientists have signed on. They think there's problems with the Big Bang. And there were 30 papers written at that last conference talking about the problem of the Big Bang, talking about the cosmic background radiation. You know, this is supposed to be a proof that the universe expanded because we have this leftover radiation. Folks, turn your FM radio or your AM off dial and turn up the volume. You have radio fog, okay? There's a lot of radio noise out there. There's intergalactic noise, all kinds of noise. In fact, when we were having any of these meteor showers in the Perseids on August 12th, the Leonids in November, the Geminis, if you turn your FM radio off of a station and crank up the volume, you can actually hear the meteor showers. Shh, they go through your radio on those nights when the peak. Just one article I thought was kind of cool because the guy was writing about the fact that the cosmic background CMB radiation really does not prove the Big Bang. There's so much radio noise out there, so much radio fog, they say, that didn't really prove anything. So this magazine, Scientific America, special issue, goes on, and it says the Big Bang cannot answer six profound questions. The first and the main problem is the very existence of the Big Bang. How could everything appear from nothing? One of the problems is the uniformity of the universe. If we look at the universe, how come it's so uniform? How come the galaxies are spinning? You look at the Hadron Collider and you see the particles, they shoot off in straight lines, but here we see everything going around, galaxies going around. The expansion of the universe is a problem. Dark matter is a problem. They create dark matter to explain what they see happening in the universe. Vacuum energy, the universe, the galaxies are expanding, and so it must be vacuum energy, this giant sucking sound that's making the galaxies go faster every day. The density of the universe. They say the density must be in 1 part in 10 quintillion. 1 part in 10 quintillion, okay? I like to illustrate, the ladies make a cake. If you put in a tablespoon of salt instead of a teaspoon, you got a disaster. But what they're saying, the universe is so finely tuned that if you're making this cake, you got to count out 10 quintillion grains of salt. If you get 10 quintillion in one, you got a disaster. If you miss one grain of salt, you got a disaster. That's what they're saying. This universe is so finely tuned with, it's called the anthropic principle. We look at all these things that tell us that it seems as if the universe was designed for us. And so the next graphic we have is just a beach, actually. And this just illustrates the 10 quintillion grains of sand, okay, or grains of salt. And they tell us that if you took all the sands on planet Earth, roughly equivalent to all the stars in the known universe. And here it was Jeremiah who said that the sands are like seashore. And there must have been people ready to put Jeremiah in a mental institution. Jeremiah, don't you read the Guinness Book of World? Jeremiah, our scientists have counted the stars. We know, you know, before they had the telescope, we know that there are about 6,000 stars you can see with the naked eye. Jeremiah said, like sands of the seashore, innumerable. You can't count the stars. And their scientists had counted the stars. And so today, scientists, we see, quoting Jeremiah, scientists today would tell you if you took all the sands on planet Earth, roughly equivalent to all the stars in the known universe. And we had one more graphic there of the Big Bang, because I wanted to share a statement here. This is from Dr. Pakani's book. And he says, in the beginning of the universe, it may have been as small as a millionth of a millionth of a millionth the size of the smallest atom. And here we are. And I sometimes carry a big chunk of steel and a hammer, okay? And I'm going to try to compress this steel and get it into a thimble, you know? You can't compress that. And yet they would like us to think this whole universe, all the planets and everything in the universe, take a locomotive, you know, and compress that down to the head of a pin. I mean, you know, you just go like, it doesn't make a lot of sense. And so the Scientific America said, the Big Bang has no explanation apart from dumb luck. And it goes on to say, cosmology is a difficult science. Now, we don't want to get cosmology confused with cosmetology, okay? We've got a graphic coming up here of cosmetology. So this is cosmetology. What we've been looking at is cosmology, okay? Actually, as I look at this picture, I think we just found the Big Bang right there. Okay. What is cosmology? You want the simple answer? In the beginning, God. In the beginning, God created. And that is the answer. The Big Bang, Scientific America, this highly recognized prestigious magazine says the Big Bang offers no explanation apart from dumb luck. It goes on in this article to say cosmology is a difficult science, but in many ways explaining the whole universe is easier than understanding the single cell animal. Scientific America says the living cell is more complex than New York City at rush hour. There's more going on in a living cell. What's happening at New York City at rush hour? I've been there at rush hour, okay? It's a pretty busy place. You know, we have all kinds of taxis and people and subways and elevators and text messages and everything. The living cell is more complex than New York City at rush hour. You know, Darwin used to think that the living cell was very, some protoplasm, a simple little thing. But we now know that the living cell has factories. So you realize what Scientific American just said. You know, they said the Big Bang can't explain the universe apart from dumb luck, but that's easy. That'd be easy compared to explaining the living cell. I'll read it again. The Big Bang offers no explanation apart from dumb luck. Cosmology is a difficult science, but in many ways, explaining the whole universe is easier than understanding a single cell animal. Praise the Lord. So they say that the nebular hypothesis, this idea of how this all began, how it all came to be, the idea of the concentration of hydrogen gas through gravity pulled it together and spinning and spinning and condensing. Finally, gravity got this hydrogen gas, gravity so strong that it actually reached like 100 million degrees. Hydrogen at 100 million degrees begins fusing the atoms to form heavier ones, the helium. And that's what powers our sun. That sun cranks out, 620 metric tons It fuses 600 metric tons of hydrogen every second, and they tell us it's going to go for millions of years, you know, and yet the Big Bang says this all came from a little speck smaller than a single atom. I go like, wow, guys, it just doesn't make sense, you know. So the sun is 98% hydrogen and some helium. And so if all the planets came from that, then we should see, you know, Earth, Mars, Venus, Mercury should all have similar compositions. Instead, we see less than 1% of these planets have hydrogen and helium. So it appears to be 98% wrong. The Bible tells us the earth was created to be inhabited, Isaiah 45:18. He did not make the earth in vain. He created it to be inhabited. We can test that, because there's over 100 scientific facts that tell us that we are perfectly placed, perfectly located. We have over 100 parameters about the earth that tell us it was designed for us, it was planned for us. And when you consider them together, they demonstrate that the universe has been built for man, which collectively is an overwhelming argument for a designer. Yes, we see evidence of a designer. And Paul Davies, Dr. Paul Davies noted, he's the author of the author and university professor of theoretical physics. And Dr. Davies says, the really amazing thing is not that the life on Earth is balanced on a knife edge, but that the entire universe is balanced on a knife edge and would be total chaos if any of the natural constants were off. Yes, we see hundreds of constants, things, you know, the mass of the proton, the mass of the electron, the relationship of hydrogen and the various atmospheric things that are in the atmosphere. We see these hundreds of things that are finely tuned, and it all spells and points to a designer, a mind that created it because of the complexity. It could not have just happened. How would we see all the complexity, all the beauty in this universe? It points to a designer, and he'd like to get to know you. The Bible says, you can seek him and find him if you search for him with all your heart. That's all we have for today, folks. So we want to hope you'll join us again next with the next program on Heavens Declare. Thank you for watching.